My name is Tracy Lewis, and I am interviewing James F. Robinson at 11 p.m. on March 27, 1996. Subject of this interview is drugs of addiction. Mr. Robinson, what is your date of birth?
October the 19th, 1927.
And your parents' names?
James Alman Robinson and Ola Catherine Robinson.
And where were you born?
I was born in Sylacauga, Alabama.
Okay. You have a wife?
Yes, her name is Carol Dale Robinson.
Okay. And tell me just a little bit about your educational background.
Okay. I finished Columbia Military Academy in 1945. And then I went, my education was split into two sections. I went to what was at that time Howard College. And I started in 1950 and finished in 1960 with an interim there where I was back in the Navy again. And I finished with a B.S. in pharmacy. And the college is now called Sanford University.
And it's in
Birmingham, Alabama.
Tell me a little bit about some of the jobs. You mentioned that you were in the Navy.
Yes.
Was this during a war, any period of
time? Well, I was in at the tail end of World War II. I was called into action again in Korean War, or police action as they called it that time. Well, both times were a very short period of time. I was fortunate enough to have the support of my family and going back to college again and finish in pharmacy. And I worked in manufacturing, wholesaling, retailing, on the road as a representative. And then when I finished in pharmacy, I worked in retail stores, and most of my recent years have been in hospital pharmacies. Now, I've been a registered pharmacist for 36 years. My father before me, he was a registered pharmacist for over 60 years. Kind of interesting. His father before him was in a little business down in Rockford, Hyssop, Alabama, near Rockford. And he used to sell drugs there back in the 1800s, but he wasn't a regular pharmacy or drugstore, as we know it.
You mentioned Hyssop and Rockford, Alabama, and you're from Sylacauga. Could you kind of give us an idea where these towns are located in Alabama?
Well, Rockford is in Coosa County, and Hyssop is only 4 or 5 miles to the east of there. That's where my great-great-grandfather, my great-grandfather, my grandfather, and my father were all born, in Hyssop, Alabama. And they moved to Rockford. My grandfather and my father moved to Rockford when my father was about 8 years old. And that's where he first started working in a drugstore, when he was around 11 or 12. And he went to Auburn University and finished in pharmacy in 1923. Quite a while ago.
Okay. Mr. Robinson, you mentioned that your father started working in a drugstore when he was 11 or 12 years old. When did you happen to start working in a drugstore?
Well, I was about 11 years old myself. Well, of course, mostly what I did was work for my father, you know, in his drugstore. By the way, he bought that drugstore in 1926, sold it in 1940, and bought another one. So he had a long experience in the pharmacy. And I worked in his drugstore most weekends and after school. All the time I was in high school in Sylacauga. Of course, when I went to Columbia, that kept me out of it for a while, but I started back working for him later on. Now, we were going to talk about drugs of addiction. And going back about as far as we can to get a little background, opium has been a drug of addiction for thousands of years. And it was probably misused as much as any drug ever was, but it also was was a method of helping people with pain. Now, we really didn't get much away from that until the middle of the 1800s. Just prior to the war between the states, some chemists somewhere came up with morphine, which is derived from opium. Now, morphine is a terrific painkiller, and it was given by injection only at the time. During war between states, it was used tremendously by surgeons and whoever to give the soldiers in both services, the blue and the gray, for pain. And some of them, if it hadn't been for that, they probably would have died just from pain because of the crude method of cutting off limbs and opening up people and taking out balls, shot, and what have you. The interesting thing about addiction is, to me, it was not defined. Addiction itself was not defined until sometime in the 1890s. A physician did a study and he described the effects of addiction. Now, there were a lot of veterans from the Civil War who were addicted to morphine, but they were treated with morphine because that was the only thing that would relieve their suffering. So everybody was honestly thinking that they needed the morphine. Actually, what they called the disease of addiction at that time was soldier's sickness, because only the soldiers seemed to have it. And this guy in the 1890s, he described the effects of being addicted to morphine or opium, and then having that drug taken away from them and having the withdrawal syndrome. They thought about having some regulations put on morphine juice and opium juice. They didn't at that time, however, control any of it. As a matter of fact, in my grandfather's old store down at Hyssop, Alabama, in the 1890s, you could buy tincture of opium. Common name for it at the time was laudanum. You could buy that in 1 ounce, 2 ounce bottle over the counter in a country store. It didn't require a prescription, a doctor, or anything. As a matter of fact, my grandfather told me one time, he says, you know, there's a lot of people, a lot of these ladies in Hyssop, they can't get their day started until they've had a dram of laudanum. I've always thought of that, you know. These ladies were actually addicted to opium tincture.
How much is a dram?
A dram is a teaspoonful.
Okay.
In the older sense of the apothecary measures. Now, an odd thing about this particular addiction was in around 1900 or shortly thereafter, a manufacturer came up with a product that they said would cure addiction and was not addicting itself and was the answer to all these problems. Again, it was sold without prescription, and the name of the drug was heroin. So we know what the outcome of that was. Heroin is probably more addicting than morphine, if you had some way of measuring the amount of addiction. Now, morphine was not only dangerous, but it was taken off the shelf of the druggist in about 1936. United States Treasury Department, who controlled narcotics at the time, called in all heroin products from everywhere in the United States so that everybody, the doctors and pharmacists around all over the United States, had to send in whatever their amount of heroin, whether it was injection or tablets or whatever, had to send it all back to the Treasury Department, and then it was destroyed, I assume. An interesting sidelight there is that in the 1940s, late 1940s, at least 10 or 12 years after this heroin was recalled, my brother and I were cleaning out the narcotic locker at Dad's drugstore. And these shelves were rather deep, and back in one far corner, we found a bottle that originally was labeled by the Wyeth Corporation, and it was elixir of terpene hydrate and heroin. Now, we showed it today, and I wish we had kept the bottle because it would be an interesting collector's item, if nothing else. But we poured it out, and at that time, Dan told us that was probably the best cough syrup on the market at the time. Because if you had a cough, that would definitely stop the cough. That was an interesting sidelight. One of the misconceptions that some people have, and I don't know how they come by this, but a lot of people thought that before they control narcotics and other addictive drugs, that addiction was not a problem in the United States. But it was. It was a big problem. But not only had the veterans with the soldier sickness, they were addicted to morphine. And most of them had to continue to have morphine, at least a certain amount, to keep them from just virtually dying of withdrawal syndrome. But in 1914, the Harrison Narcotics Act was passed by Congress, and it controlled narcotic products, opium and morphine, heroin, codeine. All of them were controlled by the Harrison Narcotics Act. Marijuana. Okay, marijuana was not included in the Harrison Narcotics Act until about 1920 or 20, somewhere along in there. They included marijuana. Prior to that, you could buy in any drugstore you went into a 1 ounce box of marijuana. What today the people who use it would call it marijuana, would call it Colombian gold or something like that. It was just the flowering tops and leaves. And I think it cost about 25 cents, which at the time was pretty expensive for that sort of thing, but it was used mostly by, and this is a statement that I read in the history books, it was used mostly by blue-collar workers, smoked in a pipe, and it was thought of as a tranquilizer, what we call tranquilizer today, but it was a blue-collar worker's drug of relaxation. And, of course, it was at the time you were able to buy marijuana and sell it. And an interesting thing, we used to live in Iowa. And during World War I, the United States government sent seed for the hemp plant, Cannabis sativa, which, in other words, is another word for marijuana, to farmers in Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, a place like that, and ask them to grow the marijuana plant so they can have it, the product to use to make rope with, in other words, hemp. Uh-huh. Now, there's still, you can drive, if you can recognize a plant quickly, you can drive along the highways in Iowa and Illinois and see the old marijuana plants growing wild where they had been once farmed for the hemp. And of course, that was in 1915, 16, somewhere else. But as a matter of fact, the people who sold marijuana on the streets in Chicago, Dubuque, places like that, had a name for it. It didn't have a large percentage of THC, which is the active ingredient, but they called it IG for Iowa grass. So that's kind of an interesting addictive story, but you can still find it along the highways around farms where they used to have it. Now,
kind of like wildflowers, right?
Yeah, really.
It just grows
free and doesn't really have much of a threat to people because, like I say, the THC content, the tetrahydrocannabinol,
mm-hmm.
that's the active ingredient in it, and it's very low quantity, so that percentage, so they don't have much trouble with that.
And when you say active ingredient, that is the ingredient that
causes the euphoria, which people get addicted to. There is a difference between the addiction for something like marijuana or peyote medicines and then the addiction for opium-based narcotics because there's more of a, not a physical addiction for it, but a psychological addiction.